It's May 21st, 2014, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ran Ozawa, and we cover the Geek Beat here on Hawaii Public Radio.
First, we'll look at the latest tech news and happenings in Hawaii and beyond. Then joining us today is Mark Hines from Mid-Pacific Institute to tell us about the Kupuho Academy. And also we have Spencer Toyama from Sudokru, and he's here to tell us about an energy-saving program called WeFficiency.
Finally, we will talk to finalists, from the recent UH Business Plan competition. We'd, of course, love your questions or comments as part of that conversation. Be ready to call in or tweet, but first, the headlines.
Plans to build a new Trans-Pacific undersea telecommunications cable continue to inch forward despite years of delays and unsuccessful partnerships. The New Zealand news site Stuff reported yesterday that the Hawaiki Cable project is now just a few weeks away from finalizing its $300 million 25-terabyte link. The Hawaiki Cable is expected to run between New Zealand and Australia to Oregon via Hawaii, but the landing point in Sydney, Australia won't be announced for a few more weeks, and there are no details on its infrastructure plans and partners in the United States.
The progress reported last week is based on the company finding an equity partner in New Zealand and a bank in Australia to provide debt financing. Hawaiki CEO Remy Galasso said that all that's left is to convert letters of intent from customers signed up over the years into firm contracts. Hawaiki Cable says its connection will consist of four fiber pairs running more than 8,000 miles. Its 25 terabit capacity is said to be big enough to carry 4 million HD movie streams at once, and the company says that the link could be live by March of 2016.
Telecom industry experts and some government officials have touted the need for the new cable to provide a backup to and competitor to Southern Cross Cable. Southern Cross was commissioned in 2000 and runs a similar Trans-Pacific route with a capacity of 3.6 terabytes. Paul Brislin, head of the Telecommunications Users Association, told the news site, Southern Cross says the international component of any internet provider charge is minuscule, and the way the ISPs talk, it is the one thing that stops them from offering really large data caps. Time will tell who is right and who is blowing smoke. Now, you know, the thing about blowing smoke is that we've been covering this story for, you know, several
years. I think as long
as
the show's been on.
Probably.
This cable will come eventually.
I did talk to two official people in our state who will remain unnamed, and they confirmed that they have been continuing to work on the Hawaiki cable as well.
All right.
So, I mean, one person was part of DBID, the other one was part of Hawaiintel.
And things are moving forward.
Yeah.
Well, on this program 2 weeks ago, renowned astrophysicist Alex Filipenko talked about exploring the cosmos, and a caller prompted him to explain how rare it is to spot a supernova while it's happening. Well, today, astronomers announced that they were able to capture images of a star in the process of exploding. Many of the key observations, in fact, were captured using the Keck Observatory here in Hawaii within 6 hours of the star's self-destruction. And the study, which was published in the journal Nature, is in fact co-authored by Filipenko.
At the heart of the study are a type of star called the Wolf-Rayet stars, which are more than 20 times as massive as our sun and at least 5 times as hot. Because they have strong stellar winds and are deficient in hydrogen, when compared with other stars, the Wolf-Rayet stars have easily recognizable stellar signatures. Astronomers long believe some supermassive stars become Wolf-Rayet in the final stages of their lives and are therefore likely sources of supernova. Now, for the first time ever, scientists have direct confirmation that the Wolf-Rayet star sitting 360 million light years away died in a violent Type 2b supernova.
The explosion was discovered by the 48-inch Palomar telescope in California, which issued an alert early enough to allow additional observations with the Keck telescope before the sun rose here in Hawaii. The spectrum readings are believed to have been taken only 5.7 hours after the event. Filipenko said in a statement, "We are gradually determining which kinds of stars explode and why and what kinds of elements they produce. These elements are crucial to the existence of life, so in a very real sense, we are figuring out our own stellar origins."
I know it's kind of great that we had Filipenko in the studio here with us, and of course he never said that he did.
Yeah, I'm sure the study was working its way through the system, and he played it straight.
Yeah, and I'm still quite amazed at the fact that they have the telescopes, aiming at the stars, at the heavens, and they can still pick out a supernova. I mean, they must have pretty wide swaths of sky that they're actually imaging.
Well, they're looking for a specific thing like flash ionized of activity. There's a signature that they're looking for. They're saying that these new tools, this was based with the intermediate Palomar transient factory system, mm-hmm. is like 20 times stronger than Hubble. So they're just getting better and better at spotting these things.
Well, here's a couple more quick stories we wanted to share with you. The University of Hawaii geologists last week announced that they have found evidence of an ancient underwater volcano off Oahu's west coast. The discovery changes the conventional belief that the islands were formed by two volcanoes. Now, the Waianae and Ko'olau mountain ranges. The third volcano, named Ka'ena, is the oldest of the three, but was the second to surface more than 3 million years ago.
And a report in Wired magazine today revealed that NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden actually organized a cryptography meetup for the local community in Kaka'ako several months before his bombshell revelations last May. Snowden just called himself Ed and said he worked for Dell as he hosted a visiting cryptography expert with high capacity at the Box Jelly. They taught people how to use tools like TrueCrypt and Tor. And I love that kind of stuff. I shouldn't have missed that meetup.
You know, they should have a autograph wall over at the High Capacity, and maybe there's an ad written.
We should go look.
Yeah. Well, Noah, joining us in the studio is Mark Hines from Mid-Pacific Institute to tell us about a new summer program called Kupu Ho. Welcome to the show, Mark.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, so I am curious about Kupu Ho, and how is this program perhaps considered different from any other summer program that might be offered at Mid-Pacific or any other summer school?
There's actually a couple of things that make it unique in how we've structured it. One is we've really engaged a lot of community partners so that instead of it being one-to-many, we've got strands that allow folks to specialize in science standards or place-based learning. Mm-hmm. We've got a great partner in Envision Learning Systems. They've been doing deeper learning kinds of project-based learning schools for over a decade. And so our partnerships make it strong. But what really makes it unique is it's not just 3 days in the summer, but we try and build a community of practice that lasts throughout the calendar year. So we meet 3 days in June, 2 days in October, 1 day in March. And so that gives us a chance to stay in touch with the teachers we work with. It gives us a chance to continue to help them develop their work and to provide expertise. And so most of the workshop is focused on their development of their work, teacher as designer, not so much on leader telling people how to do things.
Mm-hmm. Now, we cover education quite a bit, innovation in education. And in fact, it was maybe a month ago where you had called in to provide your own thoughts as well. Whenever we cover those topics, we do get a lot of great conversation. And we do focus specifically on project-based learning, STEM learning and such. Mm-hmm. For this Kupu Ho Academy, of course, as the nerd, as the person who my dad works with Mid-Pacific Institute, he talks a lot about their one-to-one iPad program and some of the other programs they're doing. Where does technology fit into this academy?
It's a really good question. For us, technology is the vehicle to get you to where you want to go. And so one of our strands is the one that I'm running, which is how to bring mobile technologies into deeper learning projects. But we see the technologies that are used as a means to get to better academic rigor, to get the students more connected to communities, to bring more adults into the work they're doing, to differentiate the learning that's happening. And so technology is a means to get to the kind of work that we know really works. Mm-hmm. And the other part of that for us is teachers are more engaged when they're designing the work themselves. It's not a curriculum off the shelf, but it's something that is around their passions or their interests. And so one of the things that we do with our structured time is to give teachers support so that they can take ideas that they have with their curriculum and can move them forward with advice, with counseling, with peer kind of collaboration and feedback loops so that that work gets better and better iteratively as they go through the 3 days, 2 days, 1 day with us.
You know, this sounds like a pretty innovative program. Is it geared to just Mid-Pacific students or is it open to anybody? What's the audience that you're looking for?
That's the things that's most exciting for us. When we started this 4 years ago, just as a small pilot, it was just our teachers. And we saw the opportunity to really provide this to the community. So this year, right as to date, we have 40 teachers signed up. 15 of those are outside of our staff. So mm-hmm. they're DOE, charter schools, other independent schools. And our goal is to broaden the group because we found last year when we had a large audience of DOE and charter school teachers, that the conversations are richer because all of us bring the resources, the expertise, the experiences we've had in the work we do. And I think that's the strength of our partners. So people like Pacific America Foundation with Herb Lee and Kapono Siadi provide us an opportunity to have place-based learning, which is a really strong thread for some of our charter school and public school partners, mm-hmm. so that we're focusing on an area that they would like expertise. And so that gives us a chance to really broaden the experience for people so it ties to what they want to do in their schools.
I'm curious about some of the projects that might be used as examples. We've had on our show Brian Dote, who is still yet not, but will soon be the Chief Innovation Officer at Mid-Pacific Institute. He's definitely laying the groundwork, and he starts in August. But I would imagine perhaps someone like him would be an asset because of his background, for example, in mobile app development and the great attention that we're seeing in mobile development for schools.
Sure. And in fact, you know, one of the things that we'll do in the strand that I'm running, which is on mobile learning, is look at some of the frameworks that people use to bring in technology. So we know so many schools in the state right now are either deep in or just at the pilot phase of doing one-to-one programs in their school, you know, whether it's mobile kind of things like iPads or Chromebooks or whether it's laptops. And so there's different ways that teachers can look at how does that support active learning? How does it support community building? How do we build portfolios with it? What are the ways that we can digitally record and give teachers an opportunity to look at the ways by which they can get students to take the content that they're learning and map it to ways that they have strengths, whether it's in media, whether it's in storytelling. And so it opens up a really wide range of assessment for teachers. And the confidence to do that comes from people sharing and building work around what good examples look like.
Okay, so Kupu Ho is really for teachers then. It's not a program for students.
Correct.
Okay,
and in fact, it's also for curriculum coordinators as well. So we've had folks come because it gives them a chance to take this work back to their
teachers. So the 40 that you're talking about are the kind of the instructors, but you're opening up the program so that more teachers and curriculum development people can actually participate. What's the total capacity of the program?
We can actually double the size we have right now with the community partners we have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we had 40 more teachers sign up in the next 2 weeks, boy, that would be marvelous because we have the space to do it and we've got the expertise that we're really excited to share.
Well, we definitely have a lot of educators in our audience and I would encourage them to take a look. Where can they go to find more information on the Kupu Ho Academy?
If they just go to our website, midpac.edu, under academics, there's a link there for the main page of that. Or if you just Google Kupu Ho, I found that you could pretty much misspell it any way you want. We still come out on top of just a Google search for Kupu Ho, so...
Great. So great capacity building resource.
We're excited to provide this as a way for our teachers and the community to come together and really develop good work.
Thanks, Mark, for joining us.
I really appreciate being here. Thank you.
Now also here in the studio is Spencer Toyama from Sudocrew to tell us about a upcoming, soon to be announced, energy program called WeFficiency. Welcome to the show, Spencer.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This program we're jumping the gun a little, but we got so excited because it's going to be announced in detail tomorrow. But we were hoping that you'd be able to give us a little bit of a preview of what WeFficiency is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, totally. You guys have the scoops. WeFficiency is a crowdfunding platform where nonprofits that normally have high barriers to entry to get financing for energy efficiency improvements can now turn to the crowd. So this is kind of the first time in history where nonprofits have this financing option available to them. We're using technology in a way that it's never been done before, and in a way that seems kind of familiar with crowdfunding and things like that. But they can turn to the crowd, finance these energy efficiency improvements, and actually pay the crowd back from the savings. So within about 3 years, everyone will get whatever they pledge to.
So it's sort of like the opposite of Kickstarter in the sense that you might donate, you may get something for your money, you may not get something for your money, but here the way it is designed is I want to support this, I want to help fund this, and if all goes well, that investment is back. So you're just helping them over that hump.
And this is like kind of a really ideal thing to do in Hawaii considering that we have the highest energy rates in the nation. I think we're at 37 cents a kilowatt hour. We're the third highest in the world after Germany and Poland, I think. So it's really imperative that we try these kind of things that help nonprofits like Hawaii Public Radio, which is actually one of the projects projects that we're starting out with YWCA and Damien Schools. And we're working with some of the local business community as well. So my company, Sudocrew Solutions, we work with Blue Planet a lot. We're big supporters of them. So we're actually matching the first $500 to some of these projects. Nella Media Group has offered to sponsor two-night hotel stay. So we're going to run like a fun little social media campaign with that. Mm-hmm. So please pay attention on Facebook and Twitter at WeEfficiency.
So the way it works is if people invest in this and that goes toward buying CFLs and mm-hmm. helping the nonprofit become more energy efficient, the nonprofit will save money, and by the savings of that money, they can then turn that savings into better programs or more programs. Or,
exactly. You know, so each one of these projects saves the nonprofit between, I think, $4,000 to $6,000 a year mm-hmm. in energy savings. And so what that means for Hawaii Public Radio, you guys have to license a lot of your programs that everyone enjoys, like Wait, Don't Tell Me in This American Life. And those things, I think a lot of people don't know, those things cost thousands of dollars. And along with your overhead costs, it helps. What can $4,000 do for Hawaii Public Radio a year? Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's helpful to every organization that comes through. So Damien Schools, they obviously want some education initiatives that they want to follow through with. YWCA has their Dress for Success and other programs that the community enjoys, and we're just trying to make that easier for them and try to save the planet at the same time. So it's kind of a really nice win-win for everyone, right?
And a nonprofit is always basically trying to make sure the most of their money goes to their cause. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what the level of scale is. I mean, I've seen crowdfunding campaigns for $1,000. I've seen crowdfunding campaigns for $1 million. What basically is the scale? I mean, what's an example project specifically that somebody would be supporting?
Right. So these are all, I think the first three are all light, all about lighting. Mm-hmm. And that's because lighting has the greatest impact, but it depends on the facility and how much lighting they have and how much lighting they need, right? I think we started out with all projects between $10,000 and $15,000. So they're relatively small, but this can scale out to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the payback scales with it because it's based on energy savings. So and this is kind of like I think this is also a really good cue for local businesses that are thinking about energy efficiency improvements, because we're actually showing that it does pay back within 3 to 4 years if you invest in these kind of things. And the payback that you get, you know, after that that initial investment of like $12,000 to $15,000, after that's paid back, those savings continue, and mm-hmm. the price of electricity, as we all know, continues to rise throughout all of this. So while we're paying 37 cents today, we were paying 21 cents a few years ago, and I don't know what we're going to be paying, you know, like 20 years ago when the warranty on the light bulbs expire. Mm-hmm. I think it's 22 years or something like that.
But so I'm curious, you had mentioned some of the partners like Hawaii Public Radio and Damien Schools and YWCA. If somebody wanted to, you know, invest in some a nonprofit that you hadn't mentioned, I mean, is it just limited to those, or are there others that are available?
It's limited to these right now.
Okay.
We're looking for other nonprofits to go through this platform, but it is a bit of a process because we actually have to Blue Planet did a lot of this. They mm-hmm. or they did all of it pretty much. So they had to get an energy audit for the facility and make sure that the savings were were achievable for, you know, what they wanted to install. So it's not like any nonprofit can just come in and do it. They mm-hmm. they actually have to be vetted a certain amount, and we have to make sure that the funders get their money back. So all of the improvements have to be improvements as well.
Okay,
well, as somebody who's backed crowdfunding campaigns that didn't work out, I think that this is an easy sell in the sense that not only are you doing something helpful and good, but that, again, if all goes well, you can then turn around and perhaps fund another project. So the details come out tomorrow, but if somebody wanted to bookmark someplace to go looking for some starter information, where should they go?
So right now there's a sign-up page at weefficiency.org, but please follow us on Twitter at weefficiency and Facebook. .com/WeEfficiency.
Who came up with that name? You did?
That was David Aquino from the Blue Planet Foundation.
Very
He's
good.
The brainchild. He started this whole thing.
Well, thanks to Spencer and Mark for joining us. And that's what's been happening this week. We'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Nick Fisher, Ruth Gagarin, and Magdi Iskandar.
What was the main objective at the UH Business Plan Competition, and what were these winning projects? We'd, of course, love your thoughts or questions as part of that conversation. Be ready to call in or tweet at 941-3689 or toll-free from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689.
And, of course, you can tweet us your questions at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
When does a theatrical audition become a seduction? And if it does, who's seducing whom? The play Venus in Fur is an erotic pas de deux played mostly for laughs that's being given its Hawaii premiere by the All the World's a Stage Theater Company. It's a two-character play that's filled with surprises, and we'll hear about it tomorrow morning at 8 on The Conversation.
Nearly a third of college students in the United States are the first ones in their families to go to college. For many of them, entering higher education can be something of a shock.
In fact, some of us refer to first-generation students almost like they're immigrants stepping into a new land. It's new language for them. It's new customs. It is culture shock in a lot of cases.
I'm Sarah McConnell. Join me for With Good Reason, Thursdays at 6:30 on Hawaii Public Radio.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And joining us today is Nick Fisher, Ruth Gagarin, and Magdi Iskandar. Nick heads up the MedEbed team and took third place over at the business plan competition.
Ruth, meanwhile, and Magdi as well, are from the Miwa Technologies team, which took first prize for their radio frequency monitoring device.
And how did these teams stand out from the rest? We'd love to hear your questions and comments. And, of course, that number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Nick, Ruth, and Magdi, we want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I'll start with the sort of the general question about, you know, the business plan competition, and it happens every year. It's with the Schuyler School of Business over at the Pacific Asian Center for Entrepreneurship. And Ruth, maybe give us a little bit of a background on what this business plan competition is about and how perhaps you decided to get involved with it.
Well, I'm currently a PhD candidate right now working on this device for early detection of heart failure, mm-hmm. and I came back to put this into market. That was my goal. So having this business plan was a pathway to that. So we formed a team, and we put a plan together, and it was one of the best experiences we've ever had. I mean, it was something very different for us. I mean, we're used to the research, but doing the whole marketing part of it, it was a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, Magdi, this program's been going on for some time. Have you participated in it before? I mean, have you seen some evolution over the years?
I personally haven't participated in it before. However, I have seen many success stories, and I did see the impact of this program on many of the startups that actually have a successful career beyond the business plan, and mm-hmm. they were able to launch their business plan. So it's a launching pad for many of the small businesses.
And what was it? What was it that said, okay, this is the time I'm going to jump in?
That's actually a little bit long story. We initially have a research program funded by the National Science Foundation, mm-hmm. and they invited us to participate in something called Innovation Corporation. This is something started by a group from Stanford, and it meant as at commercializing academic research. So they train faculty members in order to be able to move forward and try to commercialize and create business as a result of the research projects. They invited us in Washington, D.C. for a six-week kind of training program, and we were in a cohort with 21 other universities, the who and who in the nation, the Michigan, the Purdue, the UC San Diego, the UCLAs, and so on. And at the end of the six-week program, we participated in presentation, and our project actually won the best of show among all these 21 universities. After that, they recommended us to the Office of Science and Technology Programs in the White House, and they labeled our program as Entrepreneur Success Story, with a story to be posted in the website of the White House. Mm. they encouraged us very strongly to move forward with this project and try to commercialize it. And since we, and hence we actually established the Mayway Technologies company to help us commercialize the project. Mm-hmm. And one way to raise money initially for this project is effectively to participate in the business plan mm-hmm, competition.
Mm-hmm. And Nick, maybe it's a little bit different story for you. You're kind of a student. I'm assuming that you are part of the biz school. And maybe maybe give us a little background on where you're coming into this business plan.
Okay, hi. I'm actually an electrical engineering student.
Okay, very good.
UH. So I've had Iskander as a professor before. So we joined a class last fall. It was a mechanical engineering class. It was a biomedical class where we're given a real biomedical problem and we have to design a solution for that. Medibed is basically the outcome of that solution. And we saw the PACE entrepreneur business plan competition to take that business and get that, take an engineering product into a business plan.
Okay, no, interesting. So the PACE business plan competition really wasn't necessarily targeted only for biz school attendees.
No, it's targeted to all students in UH and the whole campus.
So I guess in the engineering school, I mean, are you getting like announcements, flyers? How do you know about the, you know, this space?
They announce it on their website. They publicize it. And there is a very strong motion in, throughout the UH to encourage entrepreneurship. And participation in business plan is one avenue that very clearly identified now as one way of getting involved. But I think our administration, in particular, our Vice President for Research and Innovation, has Dr. Vasilis Sermos, have been very instrumental in starting new programs that can actually stimulate and accelerate the development of startups and entrepreneurships throughout the campus of the UH.
I'm kind of curious, how many teams actually were part of this competition?
Well, we don't know the number of initial number of teams, but we know there was 16 semifinalists.
Ah, okay. Well, one thing that struck me, of course, when we were looking at the list of participants, at least, and of course many of the winners, it seemed that medical technologies or that there was kind of a theme. Was this something that just naturally evolved, or was it something driven in the organization of the event, Ruth?
I'm not quite sure how it came about, but I think right now, healthcare, we have a really big problem, I mean, with the aging population. So I think having innovative devices to for those type of problems we have right now, I mean, it's really important. I mean, just with heart failure alone, we have 5 million people right now, and every year there's about 500,000 new patients. So having a solution for those type of problems, it's really important in our society. So I think it was just inevitable that it was about to happen.
I'm just kind of curious. Did you get a sense of, as far as the cross section of other types of business plans that were being pitched during this competition?
What else did you see?
Yeah, what else did
there?
You see?
We've heard a little bit. I mean, of things like some apps, things like that, or energy type, or
marketing and website development. Bridal shows, kind of advertisement. So there are a wide variety of programs. The way I think I understand it, that College of Business students are required to participate in the business plan. But for us, for engineering students, they voluntarily go there. And not surprising, they often win.
But I think you're starting to see a lot more collaboration between the business people and the engineering people. And I think that's really important because they bring different types of skill set. And when you're forming a business or you're going into entrepreneurship, that's really important. You bring in different skill set and everyone have different strengths. So I think we saw it in this one. We knew that for our team, we were lacking the business side of it because we're so used to the technical side. So having that feedback from our business advisors and our coaches and having to bring in another person from the business school, that was really important. And so being able to work with all the different groups of people, I think, was critical for our
We are talking to finalists from the University of Hawaii's Business Plan Competition, and they are from Miwa Technologies and MedEbed. And if you've got a question about this UH-wide competition for entrepreneurship, or if you've got a question for a couple of our guests, please feel free to call 941-3689 or toll-free from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689. We're also looking for you on Twitter at Hawaii or at Bite Marks. Now, Nick, I do want to hear about everyone's specific specific project. So tell me about MedEbed.
So MedEbed is a repositioning bed that provides repositioning therapy for critically ill babies in the ICU or the NICU. So under extreme conditions where it's too risky for nurses and doctors to pick up and reposition the baby, our device will aid that situation. And they need to do this every 4 hours because of bed sores or rashes. They just have to reposition the baby. But in critical states, our solution is a much safer and less riskier solution.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that is better than the gentle hand of a qualified nurse that MedEbed does with greater confidence?
Well, our platform can pick up the whole patient at once. There are certain cases, it's called ECMO. It's basically a heart-lung machine. They have catheters that go into their heart and lungs. And if you rotate the neck different from the torso, that could be life or death situation. So we rotate and move the patient all at once.
And did you play a part in designing that system?
Yeah, so I'm an electrical engineering student, and we joined four engineering students in a mechanical engineering class, and we developed a prototype, initial prototype. We later went on to the UH business plan competition, and we actually acquired two MBA students to join that business side of the team.
You know, one of the things I'm always curious about, and, you know, we have the Startup Weekend folks come on, and I'm curious about how teams form. So, Nick, in your case, when you went to the competition, you had yourself, electrical engineer, you had four mechanical engineer students. So that's kind of the core of the team. You go to the competition. How did you attract the couple of biz school team members? I mean, what was the process by which you recruited those individuals?
I guess, well, actually, Pace helped out with this. They had a mixer event, so free food. Okay. Everyone got attracted.
Free food's good, yeah.
Certain business students actually need to participate, or they were just interested, so they showed up. They didn't have an idea. Engineers had an idea.
So was there a way that you were advertising your, let's say, you know, idea or your product that drew them to your team?
I think there was a moment for each business to talk, and we told our idea, and we basically were looking for business students. So a few business students talked to us, and we got their cards, and we met up with them later on.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And Ruth, I mean, what was it in your situation where you came, who did you come in with? I know Magdi was part of the team, and perhaps there were some other members from MIWA, but how did you recruit the biz school element into your team?
Actually, for us, well, we submitted the executive summary, and one of the things that they've recommended was we need to get somebody in the business school or somebody that's involved in business to help us solidify our plan a lot better. And so somebody suggested one of the business students. And so,
actually, initially when we started, I thought I can handle the financial part of the business plan.
Well, you know, most professors figure they can handle it.
Exactly right. And very quickly I realized we do need help, and we do need somebody with expertise in that area. And hence you're right, a friend from the business school, Professor Shirley Daniel, recommended a business student. And he was, Matt Amore. And he was very capable in developing a very successful financial model for our
Well, that's great, Maggie. I mean, that's a lot of humility to actually say, hey, you know, let's bring on this team member.
I tried.
So, Ruth, why don't you tell us about MIWA Technologies and your specific solution that you're developing?
We're actually developing a device for early detection of heart failure and doing that through measurement of lung water content. And it is one of the major indications of a lot of the cardiopulmonary diseases.
And how would you make that evaluation? Is it an invasive process, or what's
the innovation?
It's
actually non-invasive, and right now through the interviews that we've conducted with a lot of the physicians, they said they have nothing right now to measure that directly and non-invasively. So this device that we have right now is the only thing out there that can claim that it is non-invasive and can monitor lung water continuously.
And how do you monitor lung water? I'm hopefully not, you know, breaking into your secret sauce, but what is the basis of the technology where you can get that important diagnostic information without making the patient uncomfortable?
Well, right now what they have in the hospitals are things like MRI, or they even measure the weight of patients. And so it's all indirect.
Hmm.
Actually, Dr. Scanlon.
Yeah, we basically have an RF sensor that when placed on the chest of the patient, the RF signal, the microwave signal, will penetrate inside the body, and we monitor the reflected signal or the return signal, if you wish, and based on that, we can relate it to the changes in amount of water accumulating, the properties of the lung tissue, mm-hmm. which is related to the amount of water accumulation in the lung.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, Maggie, you said that, well, Ruth is a PhD student. You were working on this device as part of your studies. And you had indicated that you had gone away to the mainland for a bit and came back. What was it that sort of drew you away and what, you know, drew you back?
Maggie.
Running at himself right now. Actually, I was done with my master's, but at the very last week of my master's, I saw the results for the clinical testing, the first human clinical testing that we've conducted, and so I couldn't believe. I mean, it's something to do it on the phantom models, but when you actually get the real results like from humans. I was just so excited. I just showed the results to Dr. Iskander, and I said, I'm coming back.
so you had been involved with this product development even as a master's student.
Right.
Oh. Now, Nick, again, sort of a different background, coming in from the engineering department, electrical engineering department, and participating. I'm kind of curious, was this sort of your first experience in kind of a pitch and a plan competition to basically make your case for the viability of what you're trying to do?
Actually not. I teamed up with another engineer in the past, and in 2011 we did the Breakthrough Innovation Challenge, which basically is like a 2-minute pitch to the Scheidler, the PACE Entrepreneurship Center. So we did a 2-minute pitch, and first we actually made a 2-minute YouTube video, and then we had a 10-minute pitch. And luckily, we took first in that. So we got a little cash prize, and it basically intrigued my interest of entrepreneurship a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you find the experience here with this business plan competition? What did you get, apart from obviously doing well and placing, what was the benefit back to you?
I don't really look at things from a business perspective because coming from an engineering background. So that helped out a lot. And then just all the networking and the coaching that is available and just seeing that there's a small like entrepreneurship culture or community kind of starting and just meeting different people. And also just, I think you have a business plan, you finally tackle that, but then actually starting a company is a whole nother level that we haven't even
We'll get into
on.
That. We'll get into that. Now, I'm still kind of curious from a program standpoint. Let's say, you know, you see the application, you say, hey, let's join this business plan competition. What kind of commitment of time is it that you have to dedicate to doing this? Is it a weekend? Is it a week? I mean, how long of a process is this?
I guess it just depends on your skill set. But after the first week of, or the first month of spring semester, you have your executive summary due, and that can be up to 6 pages. But usually, have an executive summary, you want a full business plan already thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And then a month later, your semifinal, your full business plan is due, and then you have your semifinal presentation, and then the third month is already finals week, so that's the final
list. So this is over the course of the entire semester.
Yeah, that's correct.
I just want to add that in our case, we thought it would be a relatively easy way to go into the business world and try the business plan. Initially, from our iCorp, National Science Foundation, iCorp, and all associated presentations, we thought we have much of the material available already to participate in the business plan.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we got in the business plan and we found the demands for business model and financial statements and so on, it was a huge commitment on our part, and we took it very seriously because once you're in it, you have to win it, and we have to do whatever it takes.
Yeah. Good. I want to continue this conversation because I want to understand where you're going to go in the next steps. Hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Nick Fisher, Ruth Gagarin, and Magdi Iskandar about the innovation in the healthcare industry.
And yes, what are those next steps from taking a business plan and having a viable business? We'd, of course, love to hear your questions as well. You can give us a call at 941-3689 or from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689. You are listening to Bite Marks Cafe.
Scientist Paul Ekman says he has a way to get to the truth. It's a simple computer program that he claims will teach you to peer into a person's soul.
Waiting for the pitch.
Okay. Oh! That was so fast.
But you gotta be fast. I'm Jad Abumrad on the next Radio Lab. We go deep into the minds of people who lie and the people who try and catch them.
Saturday morning at 10.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Jacob Needleman, author of What is God and Necessary Wisdom. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about things that really do matter.
Sunday morning at 11.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozal, and we're talking to Nick Fisher, Ruth Gagarin, and Magdi Iskandar about using the business plan competition at UH as a launching pad for a business.
And is the mentor network strong enough to help you get to that next level? And of course, you can give us a call here at 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And, you know, I want to talk to you, give you a chance, Magdi, about, you know, since you already have a business already kind of started, the question of what are your next steps? Maybe you can give us a sense of where your business is right now, and how do you see this business plan competition being a launching pad from your perspective?
Now that we have the business, the first item that we needed to take care of is the patent. So we applied for additional patent to protect additional advances in our technology. And the steps after that is the clinical validation of the device. We have tested the device on animals as well as on phantom experiment in the labs with Rod Sen and other graduate students. We actually have an IRB to test the device on human, but not with changes in lung water, only for vital signs monitoring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we need to validate the data for clinical trials and compare with clinical patients that have heart failures. So our ongoing effort now is to raise funds, actually, to help us with FDA approval of our device, which will take as much as $250,000 to $500,000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, before the break, it seems that there's been, you know, surprising lessons along the way. You do extremely well at what seems like a national competition, and so you think, hey, do the local one, no problem. But there were still things that you needed to do to get to the business plan, to the depth that you wanted. So I kind of wanted to hear a little bit more about that. Ruth Sen, you know, you've studied it, you've worked on it for a long time. You see this work on the White House homepage, and you're pretty stoked. So how did you get your mindset back into making this relevant for the UH specific business plan competition, and what was new for you to learn?
Actually, that was one of the bigger things that we learned, was your audience. I mean, for the NSF one, what the ones that Dr. Iskandar guys participated in, a lot of it was the science validation of it. So but for the PACE entrepreneurship one, the business plan, we had to get into the details. I mean, in terms of the exact thing that you're going to do. I mean, 5 years from now, the exact plan, the details, how many people you're going to have in the company from the first year to the fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
How are you
mm-hmm.
going to account for all of that? Where are you planning on having your company? You know, taking care of the insurance, things like that. So it's to the detail. So with this business plan, it helps you really think about everything that could happen.
So at the stage of it right now, MIWA has how many employees?
We just have me as the founder and the one who's taking care of the company. And for so far,
that's okay. You don't worry about the cough button.
We have been working it on it. It was a group of graduate students, basically.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I'm actually happy to share with you that we also have potentially funded project from the National Science Foundation, from the National Institute of Health, that will help us carry out the clinical validation part of the project with Queen Medical Center, with colleagues from Queen Medical Center. So this is the direction we're going, trying to go into clinical validations.
So you know, this is where it gets really kind of interesting, because how do you now go from a good business plan? You know, you have a very a valid product. You know, you're applying for some patents, but somebody has to work on sort of the business aspect on a full-time basis. Basically, in essence, bringing in a full-time employee or having people on staff now. How do you, you know, at what point in time are you going to make that decision?
We have our five-year business plan and business projections. And in it, we say in year one and possibly part of year two, we'll be working on the clinical validation of the device and getting FDA approval. Once we get the FDA approval, we'll be able to manufacture the device and probably start selling it. During this period, during the first 2 years, we'll try to rely on possibility of licensing the technology to some interested companies for in-house use and research-only use in order to see their compatibility with their own devices and their own market people and so on. But the 2 years is transitional for us, and after that, we'll start hiring people, full-time managers, as well as some engineers and so on, and we expect the company to grow to a multi-million dollar company after the 5 years.
That would be an excellent execution, I would imagine, of that business plan. Now, Nick, again, a different starting point, a different situation, but I'm curious about for you. So you do well in this business plan competition. You have a technology. Where are you in the process? Are there NIH grants just knocking, waiting to come to you, or what have you got to do next?
I guess our professors, we have supporting advisors that are professors, and they actually did get a grant to do further research this idea.
Okay.
But just through the business plan to acquire our name, we filed the LLC with Hawaii. But I would still think of as our business group as a team. Like, we need to address, how is the team going to actually push forward? Are we going to treat this as our, you know, 9-to-5 job, but we don't have money, so we're going to have to bootstrap this.
Right. And you're still students, right? And you still have to study. You still have to take finals. You still have to graduate.
Yeah.
Right?
But yeah, part of our team actually works in the industry. Some engineers actually have jobs now, so they're a little richer than I am as a student. But yeah, so just taking it from that level, we did file a provisional patent. We got to refine that. And actually, we have to develop our product, you know, to be a marketable product. It's currently just a conceptual product, so it's not safe enough for a patient to lie on yet, you know. So we really got to take that further. And I guess fundraising is a big thing in startups. So
are you going to be looking in some of the other, for example, local programs that are talking about providing funding for innovative startups? There's Blue Startups. There's a number of them. Is that part of your game plan?
That possibly can be on the horizon. At this initial stage, we just got to figure out what that roadmap is and actually address, you know, getting that team all on the same page. We were on the same page for the business plan competition, but now all emotions are high. What do we want to do? We got to get focused again.
Well, and you said, you know, like you said, focus. When you have a business plan competition, that is kind of an external focus that brings the team together. Now that that's over, what do you see as being that focus that keeps you, you know, sort of your eye on the mark of this business?
I guess just refining the product and getting actually a utility patent, trying to gain some IP in our business. So just designing that product to customer requirements and different specifications and making it.
So, in contrast to having an existing product and a lot of research and funding and such, you have a concept and an idea. So I'm kind of curious what you think made you stand out. You know, what about your story compelled the judges to say, hey, I think that there's something here?
I'm actually not too honest. I guess we just had a good enough plan with a good plan. As long as we put that plan in motion, I think it will be a multi-million dollar company. But there's a lot of little hoops that we have to get through before we get there.
Well, then I guess I'm curious, if you're an electrical engineering student, what made you say, you know, medically fragile infants, it was something that you wanted to look into?
Well, I guess in the class, the mechanical engineering class, they had a list of 15 different issues that actual medical doctors in the industry have sponsored as a solution. So I guess out of all the topics and given a semester to build it, given that short time frame, I think this product seemed the best. I guess my background is more electrical hardware, so the electrical mechanical hardware that controls this device was more my interest.
Now, what if a company came along, could be a local company, could be a mainland company, and said, hey, you know, I think your idea is pretty good. We want to maybe hire you guys to build it, or maybe we'll buy the, you know, the part of it that we could, you know, that company could work on. What would your decision be at this point to consider that external company to perhaps get involved with your business?
I guess I would have to discuss with the initial team that made this initial design. One aspect is we do have a medical doctor on our team, so he has an emotional tie, a little more emotional tie. So he doesn't want to see a larger company just buy up this idea and then shelf it for 10 years. He actually wants to see this get to market.
So there is somebody on the team that wants to see this thing to completion.
Yeah, he does.
Now, for Magdi, you had mentioned, you know, licensing and such. But in this day and age, you know, you have Shark Tank, you have all these other shows, and the point where people are creating business purely for the purpose of a big exit and for selling it and saying, well, that was great, on to the next thing. What is the attachment? Is there that for you and your team for the solution that you're providing to help with this diagnosis?
I'm actually very glad that you asked this question because we do have some emotional attachment. We worked on a lot of research projects for a long time. As you can see, I've been doing in this business for over 30 years. But ultimately, it comes to a point where you want to have impact, and you have to have impact on the community and well development of the community. And I see that device is our way, actually, having a device that can answer the prayer for 5 million patients in the United States and 500,000 patients every year. That's a huge thing. And in our interviews when we were in Washington, D.C., during the initial stages of this process, we met with a lot of medical doctors from the Veterans Administration, from Johns Hopkins, and wide variety of medical schools around there. And some of them were saying things about how much they are still in the trial and errors in dealing with these problems. And one of actually the chief of cardiology in the Veterans Administration said measurement of a change in lung water content is the holy grail in the medical technology and medical devices. So that really provide us with some emotional attachment to the project. It's far beyond the business. It's an impact on the community and impact on the well-being of humans.
And how about you, Ruth? I mean, obviously, it brought you back to Hawaii to work with your mentor. Is this something that you just essentially need to see to its full fruition?
Yeah, this is the reason why I came back. I mean, for the PhD, it's a needed, much needed device, not just for heart failure, but there's so many other diseases out there, sepsis, burn victims. I mean, the list goes on, and being able to measure lung water content, it is the holy grail, and it just opens up the door for many things in to help people. So
I'm curious, now that you're done with the competition and you have the business plan, and I hear the sort of the connection that you have with your product and business to see it, you know, to the next level. Do you feel that there are the right kinds of mentors and people in the support infrastructure ecosystem here that could help you get it to the next level, Magdi?
For our case, actually, I've been extremely fortunate by having some professors from the College of Business, Professor Shirley Daniel, and she actually connected us with a group of advisors from MIT, Bud Knight and Jim Herman. These are experienced business people, and we have been on conference calls with them regarding how much of the business plan we can share and how we deal with the VCs, as you suggested. And we have been extremely lucky here in Hawaii to have the right mentoring and guidance.
And Nick, how do you feel about the sort of the business mentor ecosystem to help you kind of get to the next level?
I think it's out there. I mean, I'm still exploring that world. One little hesitation I have is just medical devices. It's extremely hard to make a medical device, I'm seeing. And I'm trying to, I guess, gather the resources and time and maybe external support to help me learn that process. I mean, FDA approvals, sure Iskander knows how long that's going to be. So we got to figure all this out.
Well, maybe another question to ask you is, I mean, this was something that you wanted to participate in. You opened a book. You said, here's a problem that I think I can come up with a solution for, and you did well. Maybe, I'm kind of curious, maybe you might just say, hey, time to flip the page, find another adventure, and do another competition with a different idea. Is that appealing to you?
It actually is appealing to me. I actually been listening that the Energy Accelerator is going to happen shortly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I was going to bring up, and, you know, I don't know if you have the answer to this question, but, you know, there's an Energy Accelerator that's kind of focused on energy companies. Blue Startups is kind of more geared toward, I think, tech and maybe the apps kind of business. There's a Big Island accelerator called GVS. It's kind of more the creative industries. And I'm curious, have you heard of any accelerator being kind of focused on the healthcare market?
Actually, our Vice President for Research and Innovation, Dr. Vasilis Sermas, is formulating an accelerator within the University of Hawaii system. $50K the first year, and I guess more money in other phases and so on, again, to stimulate and to encourage entrepreneurship within the university.
Oh, that's great to
hear. So we have inside the university some ongoing activities to help with this as well.
And I would imagine there are other, you know, healthcare startups and innovative companies here in Hawaii, and I would imagine you've talked to some of them as well.
Actually, we'll be making a presentation with Highbeam and other organization that has to do with the startups. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's the Oceanit spinoff with the
Hoana Medical.
It's also about sort of non-invasive monitoring of life signs. Have you looked at that or talked with them?
We haven't specifically looked at that because our device measured the vital signs as additional measurement, but our focus is on measurement of lung water content.
Well, Medibed might be something that, I don't know if you've spoken to any of the Oceanit.
I haven't spoken to any of them, but people have suggested that it might be interest to speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if somebody wanted to find out more about Miwa Technologies, Ruth, where can they go to check it out?
They can go to www.miwatechnologies.com. Miwa is in M-I-W-A technologies.com.
Okay, sorry about that.
We'll definitely put that up on the show notes. And Medibed, where can they find out about your next, you know, great
adventure?
Adventure.
Currently, we don't have an up and running website. We're in the process of that. But I would just look at the UH Pace website. Maybe you'll hear about us on there as well.
And then Nick, of course, you know, I think you're out on social media, and maybe your next adventure will be energy accelerator or something. Huh?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to do the application this June.
Great.
And to find more information about the ongoing research within our group, you got http://hcac.hawaii.edu. That's Hawaii Center for Advanced Communication.
Yeah, we know them well.
Which resulted in that project.
Very
fantastic.
Good. Well, Nick Fisher heads up the Medibed, and Ruth Gagarin and Magdi Iskander are launching Miwa Technologies. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us. We appreciate it very much.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about innovations in biotechnology.
And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And of course, if you have any comments or suggestions, email us at feedback@bitemarkscafe.org. And of course, you can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Bite Marks.
And you can follow me at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chung, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Koslovich.
And we leave you with our song pick of the week. Here's a band called Snarky Puppy and a song called Intelligence. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.